The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
Settles in your soul.
Better have the soul of Jefferson.
Yes, sir. In your case, yes, ma'am, Mama J.
That's true. Although when you reach a certain age, you know it doesn't matter anymore.
This is Terry Raposa and Janet Chandler. How are you, my dear?
I'm doing well.
Great.
It's spring, and it's warm, and I'm happy.
Good. Broadcasting live from downtown Reading, this is Jefferson State of Mind, 96.5 FM, where the music does sound better, and 1460 AM, we are your talk radio. And we are streaming live worldwide at kcnrradio.com, kcnrradio.com. And if you have a question or a comment, you may call in at 530-605-4567, 530-605-4567. And we archive 5 minutes after, right, Alex?
Yes, sir.
5 minutes after and share this program. We encourage people to do that. Share it, and let's get the word out there on liberty and how we can have a continuing soiree.
No, we can't have
a soiree. I can say whatever I want. Well, why can't I say soiree?
Because soiree means nighttime.
Well, it is nighttime in a lot of people's minds.
Well, yeah.
In China.
When morning begins with double-digit numbers, yes, it's still nighttime.
It does. So, anyway, we are here today, and we've got a couple of guests in the studio, one of which I'm pretty excited about. His name is Jim Burnett. I've been trying to get him on my show for a long time, but Jim has just been sort of just very elusive, so we're going to call him Elusive Jim. But anyway, Jim, my pleasure, my good friend. My pleasure here.
Thank you for having me, Terry. Glad to be part of this great team.
Yeah, he's been, Jim has been kind of the voice of reason a lot of times, and we are here with Rich Gallardo. How are you, buddy?
Good, and I'm happy to have Jim here, too. I'd love to hear him speak a lot today.
Oh, yeah. Me, too. So, anyway, with that, we are going to be talking, I believe, about some interesting things going on in the county, and that would be, first of all, we're going to start off with Measure B a bit. And, Jim, what got you even started on all this? You came to Reading, you decided that you were wanting to be someone who needed to get into the community needed some involvement from patriots. What brought you into all this?
Well, COVID brought me off of my recliner and down to the Board of Supervisors, and then the rest of it just kind of unfolded what I consider naturally. We had several years of trying to fight back for our freedom and to regain our humanity in the face of the government saying, you can't go here, you can't go there, you've got to wear a mask if you do go there, and it just was too much. And it kind of shocked my system into finding out where I could go to get some relief. And that relief was found Thursday night in Pastor Stark's church, way back, I think, in the end of probably the middle of 2020, where the Patriots got together and we eventually formed a cohesive unit to do good work and try to reclaim our county. So Measure B was kind of a natural outgrowth of that after several years of activism, and I became convinced that we really needed to reform the election system. And, of course, Rich Gallardo, Laura Hobbs spearheaded this, and now we're here after many a battle, and I'm sure there'll be some more battles, but I really believe we can get election reform.
Well, Richard, speaking of Richard Gallardo, how are you, sir?
And great.
Yeah. I think you have some
bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. I've been up since 5 working, getting ready for today.
Well, I won't waste any more time then. Go ahead. What's on your mind?
Yeah, so we're going to talk for Measure B for about 30 minutes roughly. And then, you know, the key is there's still a few people that are still kind of on the fence with Measure B. And, you know, the narrative again, why they're on the fence is because the false narrative. It's illegal, it's illegal, it's illegal. All right. That is a very unstudied, unresearched, and a very shallow and a cowardly answer, to tell you the truth. You know, in order to take local control, our sovereignty, and our rights back at the local level, we have to fight. We, the people, have to fight. And again, in our constitutional republic, we are supposed to be a bottom-up governance model. And we've lost that decades ago, decades and decades ago. And we're all trained to watch, you know, the national news, you know, Congress, the president. It's all top-down stuff. And we have to turn that. We have to turn that around. We've been trying that since COVID in this very county. That was the whole point of fighting COVID with the state, was local control over matters. And so we have to continue that education, you know, with our fellow citizens, who are the ones that are going to be voting for Measure B or, you know, yes or no. And that's really the big fight here, the paradigm shift. You know, again, we're generations into being upside down. So it's going to take some generations to get back. But you know what? That doesn't mean we don't fight. There you go. Dead silence.
I was just listening and hearing what you were saying. You know, I think the main thing is that to me, just as a citizen, regardless of where you are on Measure B, we have the right to get this on the ballot. We have the right to do it.
And you know, someone made the observation recently that every initiative, every proposed bill is illegal because it is not in the law now.
Correct.
So no matter what you do, you're starting out from a position of not being legal, and that's what you're trying to do, is make that issue legal. So when people say Measure B is illegal, well, yeah, of course it is, until we change the law.
Yeah, but also remember Prop 47 and 57, which actually relax criminal penalties. So those laws are already in place, those criminal penalties, and those propositions reduce criminal penalties by a vote of the people. So we actually can even change existing law. Absolutely we can.
You know, and the thing is that I think to most people, we believe that the Board of Supervisors should be backing the people, defending the people on no matter what. And there's a lot of taxpayer money that's used for a lot of different things. The taxpayer money that's used for, you know, defending this or defending that or defending this or defending that, or the taxpayer money that's used for a lot of different things in the county. If the people want something, I think it's up to the Board of Supervisors to support them in what they want, even if they think they're going to get sued.
And, Rich, I know that your group sued the county for reimbursement for legal fees after the first time, and now you're doing it again after Miss Katsky, is that
yes.
the name? Mm-hmm. Now you're wanting reimbursement again for more legal fees. Can you go into that, explain what's going on,
yeah.
and why and how, and where does the money actually go that the county pays you?
Well, and it's not a suit. It's just in our pleadings, the first pleadings from last year when Joe Larmore sued us. It was in our pleading to recuperate costs. And so right now we're just basically at a request and a letter stage requesting the similar thing to get our court costs reimbursed by the county. And the reason I get it, it was a private person, right, Jane Doe originally, that sued us. The fact of the matter is why we're asking the county to reimburse us it's twofold. Number one, they took no opinion on the lawsuit. So they failed. Remember, the registrar of voters and the county were the respondents. They were, and they had a duty. The county has a duty to at least defend the respondents. My God, you know, my goodness, especially when they're one of them. So they failed to defend by taking no opinion. The county also failed to motion. Well, Judge, we think you should also include the proponents of the measure as parties of interest. The county failed to make even that motion. So when both of those things happened, we were forced to get our own attorney. And so we, the proponents, really stepped in and did what the county should have done, which is defend the will of the people. And so we had to step in and do that. And that's why I think it's legitimate to ask the county to reimburse us because of the county's failures and omissions.
Okay, I get
it. I have a quick question, too. You mentioned that the attorney sued you. So did that, how did that come about? How did the attorney, is he doing it as a representative of the board, or is he just doing it in, as his office or his position to do that?
You mean last year's lawsuit when Lorimer tried to not to write title and summary?
Yeah.
So Lorimer cannot do anything without permission from either the either CEO Rickert and or the Board of Supervisors.
So is there...
You cannot act independently. So
okay. So then
the board voted 5-0 to allow Joe Lorimer to request to not write title and summary. That's what happened.
There we go. That's what we're looking at. So
correct.
5-0 to not do their job. Or have him do his job.
Correct.
You know, and I guess one of the questions we've had is that, there, you know, this is the second time that the group is asking for reimbursement. It is taxpayer money that gets reimbursed. I mean, we'd like to see it come out of the person's pocket who gets this done. Most people would.
We did file that motion.
No. Let me finish my.
Sure.
Okay. So the question that we've had is that, you know, when that money does get reimbursed, does it go back to the people who donated the money, or where does that money go that the taxpayers are paying on that?
Yeah, so thank you. That was the second part of the question. The money, it'll go back into the Measures campaign account. And at that point, it's up to each donor. Some donors, issued what's called a loan. Okay, it's all in writing. So those donors first that issued a loan are going to be offered repayment. All other donors that did not request or were not offered loan status, at that point it's just kind of a gentleman's agreement to say, hey, we've got some money back, and we've done that before. We did that last year when we got reimbursement, and we absolutely offered some folks money back. And guess what? Almost nobody wanted their money back. Almost nobody. They left it in the Measure B account.
They support the cause. That's
they support the cause.
They support the cause. And I really, I'm so glad you answered that because that was one of the things that has been bouncing around. And as you can hear, you know, whether you agree with this or you don't agree with it, Rich Gallardo just answered that question and he gave us a very valid answer. So, when do you have anything else on your mind?
Well, like, on the tail end of what Janet was mentioning too about, you know, the legal aspect of it and so forth, going to the board to make it legal. Well, it's not going to be legal unless you go to the board to get them to vote on it to make the change. That's where it becomes legal. And for, and they're, and this group is following the legal process to make that happen.
Right.
So that's the process in which you have to follow. It's written, you have to follow it to make it happen. So everything has been done by the book, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And so I don't see where anybody's getting their britches in a bunch about this whole process.
I
don't get it. If the people want something, no matter what it is, if they want to say that the sky is purple and they want it to become law, follow the process, see what happens, and then it goes out to vote, and then when they find out that the vote either goes up or goes down to their favor, then, okay, it is what it is.
What do you think, Jim?
Well, fundamentally, it all goes back to the Constitution, and it was the First Amendment right that we exercised, and our board was against us totally, so we had to fight that battle with them. And by the way, in both of these lawsuits, the one last year and the one that just happened this year, there was an urgency. There was an emergency that we had to respond to over the weekend, the first time, and then just about the same thing this year, where we were on fire contacting supporters for money to raise to fight for our constitutional rights against our board. So that was just crazy, I thought.
And, you know, and the specifics there is this last case, we got served, you know, well, I'll say it was a Monday roughly, and it had already been calendared for the next week. How on earth? Mm-hmm. So there was some collusion and corroboration here, all right, with somebody, and it was not filed as an emergency action. It was not filed as such. So how does a non-emergency action get filed, get served? And the court date's already calendared within 6 days? Are you kidding me? Somebody behind the scenes, either at the county or in the court system, or all of them, they colluded to make this happen so quickly. So I'm just saying, there's no way that would have happened that quickly without some collusion from somebody else other than Jane Doe.
Right, and there's two things, Rich, that I know you know, and Jim, I know you know this, but for the folks, one is that title and summary had to be done. End of sentence, had to be done.
Absolutely.
That was a complete cluster, period, end of sentence. Number two, when it comes to us being a charter county, within a charter, we can do anything that's within state law. Well, guess what? The state constitution, Article 18, Section 3, specifically states that the electorate can't amend the constitution. In this case, we can't amend the charter because it would be also in conjunction with the constitution. We can amend it and we can put ourselves in a position to have this on the ballot. So to me, I think we've got a lot of valid arguments against the state on this whole thing. But the whole thing is, I'll just say one thing. 10,200 people.
Mm-hmm. And going back to what Jim said, if this is a constitutional issue, the Constitution gives us the right to petition mm-hmm. our government, and that's mm-hmm. what this initiative is. And if you look at the initiative process, it is pure democracy. It is a vote of the people to make policy or to make a law. If you like democracy, you've got to love the California initiative process.
Amen.
And the people in Measure B yeah. have done this legally, righteously, according mm-hmm. to all of the rules. If you don't like Measure B, then vote against it. But this is democracy mm-hmm. at its base level.
Yeah, and again, amen. Yes, and you know, there's federal election reform, there's state election reform pending. And now there's local election reform pending. It's a beautiful thing. It's a trifecta.
Yep.
I mean, I don't know when in our history, I'm only, you know, 50-something years old, but I've never seen this trifecta mm-hmm. over one topic, national, state, and federal. And I don't know if we ever will, and, you know, as long as those of us are on this planet. I mean, we're in unprecedented time, folks.
Amen.
You know, we're riding the tidal wave, and it's just. It is an absolute just cause mm-hmm. for a fair and transparent election.
Yeah, you know, I think the main thing is that when you have both constitutions in alignment and you have a charter, I mean, what's the argument? You know, and if you have an argument to that, 530-605-4567, 530-605-4567, if you have a question. I'm going to interrupt just for a second. At the 9:30 point, we just got a text from Mark Baird, mm-hmm. and there's been a change in the Second Amendment case, so we're going to give him a few minutes at the 9, right after our break, so you want to hang on for that. Anyway, getting back to this, so Jim, at this point, with Measure B, what are the steps you're taking now as far as reinforcing it? Is it just trying to get the word out, and how's all that going?
Yeah, there's an active campaign to go out to maybe shopping centers. I don't know if there's door-to-door activity yet, but we have people going in front of Walmarts and places like that, leafleting, because mm-hmm. we have some really good handouts for Measure B, and at the same time we're handing out for different candidates in D1 and Richard in D5, Gary Oxley, as well as Clint Curtis. And, of course, Clint Curtis is a natural segue when we're doing Measure B, because we're saying, here's the guy that's actually reformed things to where people can see what's going on and be satisfied that it's being done according to plan. And so we've been getting some really good response. A few people are arguing with us, but not many, mm-hmm. because they think that we're trying to pull something on them, and as Clint Curtis says, don't trust him, trust what he's doing. Come down and see what he's doing so that you are satisfied that no matter what anybody's political point of view is, all of the votes are being processed and counted accurately and fairly.
Totally unlike they have been in the past.
Yes.
Okay.
And the situation with the censure was just ridiculous. When you have a situation where it's, you know, just before the ballots are coming out, I mean, they voted 5-0 on that. That was the way the Board of Supervisors voted on it. It wasn't just one person. They voted 5-0 to do this thing. Yeah. And the sense I got from the board is that they're just going to wait till after the election and then censure them. I didn't get the sense that they were going to either cut any kind of slack or anything. Jim, you and I were both at that meeting. Mm-hmm. And I got from the sense and what they were doing. I mean, I cannot see any justification for any of that.
Isn't this election interfering?
You think?
I mean, just the board gets sucked into it, and the people that brought it forward that, you know, dreamt it up and started making things happen, that's got to be election interfering. It just does. I mean, from the, you know, standing on the sidelines, not having attended these meetings, not seeing what's being said or hearing what's being said or seeing what's being done, just standing out on the wing, just waiting to see what's going to happen, to me, that's what it looks like.
Well, and we have to understand that the elections employees, the ones that have been there for a while, you know, 2 years or better, mm-hmm. those people are, some of them are obviously in the camp of Kathy Allen and Joanne Francesca.
Of course they are.
They want that kind of leadership back in the in that office.
Mm-hmm.
And these folks are using what are called Saul Alinsky Cloward Piven tactics.
Yep.
And so please, people, look that stuff up. It's from the 50s and 60s. It is agitation, it's distraction, it's deflection, it's lying, outright lying, it's creating consternation where there is none. It's all of those things that are happening. And by the way, as a former law enforcement officer, I will tell you this censure, everybody's saying that Monica Fugit, whatever, she did an investigation. All right, she's not a trained investigator. If policy says, as a department head, she does something, okay, fine, she did it. She's not a trained investigator. The word substantiated was used all day long. This was substantiated and that was substantiated. You know what? That means nothing in the legal realm, by the way. Never were the words corroborated used. All right? These are multiple employees in the elections office. And I'm going to say it. I will say this. They all agreed to lie under oath so that their stories aligned and then that they could say substantiated. They lied. I'm just telling you right now. They lied. Some of them did. And shame on them for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Never corroborated. No video, no audio, nothing. Okay? The substantiated part. Again, this is an administrative investigation. It's not a civil hearing. It's not a criminal hearing. So the standards are really low in order for somebody to say, yep, this happened. Okay? Now, the second part is ShastaUnfiltered.com has a really good story on the independent investigators. What were the name of that?
Oppenheimer
Group. Where roughly 2 or 3 years ago they did a investigation in the Bay Area, and it was found to be sorely lacking on so many basic investigatory levels. And these are the same people. Yeah, these are the same people. And so they're clinging on Monica Fugit, not a trained investigator. They're clinging on the Oppenheimers, who have previous failed investigations, and they're clinging to all that as gospel.
And that
should not be happening.
What about the Sheriff's Department that had an investigation going, finding that they could see that there were things that weren't quite right?
Yeah, well, separate issue, but yeah, that was a 2 or 3 year old inquiry.
Yep,
where we actually had proof of voter fraud, and right. The sheriff, and again, I think that's also on ShastaUnfiltered.com. Yes, and the sheriff said, yeah, absolutely, we've seen voter fraud. You sent us the evidence. You've proved the voter fraud, but we don't have a criminal to actually indict or arrest. So that's basically where that landed.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it really is something when you start to think about all these different things that are happening. Everything that Rich said, I mean, I can't corroborate it because I don't know.
Right.
And we can't, it's Rich's opinion, but I do have to say that Richard Gallardo does a good job when he does his digging. Okay. He digs deep. And I think that what we have to be looking at now is the whole thing of, you were talking about some people are sort of biased in the voter's office in the ROV office for Joanna. I mean, what about the supervisors? Does that look like it's becoming biased too?
What do you think, Jim?
Oh, I think Supervisor Long in particular is very much in Joanna's camp. Matt Plummer seems to be leaning that way. And, in fact, I do believe that they voted for her appointment, and they lost because three of the supervisors voted to install Clint Curtis. So, yeah, Long has a very deep and abiding
Isn't his reason. Wife involved somehow?
Well, she is an attorney for the Trinity County,
I think,
which happened to hire Joanna as a contract employee for I think $50,000.
See, I'm standing on the sidelines, not being attending these meetings, and I understand this to be an issue.
Yes.
So that's why I'm asking the question. I always ask those kind of questions, like, something doesn't smell right.
Right.
Well, it's worth investigating.
Absolutely.
It certainly has the appearance of impropriety to me.
Yep.
Oh. Looks like we need some Lysol.
Bleach.
Get that air pressure out.
So the website is VoteForB, and spell out F-O-R, VoteForB.com. Lots of information there. You'll see interviews in the last year. The text of the measure, justifications, everything. It's a beautiful website, and it's updated on a regular basis. So please go to voteforb.com please vote yes on Measure B.
There you go.
You think?
There you go.
Yeah, so anyway, we are going to go off to our break, and Jim Burnett, thank you so much for coming. I know you said you have to vamoose.
Yeah, thank you. I love the spirited discussion here. I think we did uncover some good things for the public to know.
There you go.
Now remember to share this program, and we do share this worldwide. Mm-hmm. This is live streaming worldwide, so we'd really like you folks to share this. There's some good things here. Share it with your friends, and, you know, Rex, I know you're listening. Write something, buddy.
There you go.
Time has come.
For 51.
We're getting it done.
Amen.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
Turtle Bay's glowing wild and illuminated Wildlife Lantern Festival is back and better than ever for 2026 at the Sundial Bridge in Redding, California.
Featuring 10 acres of illuminated gardens filled with larger-than-life displays of plants and animals from around the world,
including dinosaurs and icons from ancient Egypt.
Jump on the new Turtle Express for a fun ride through the show.
Glowing Wild is May 1st through June 28th, 7 to 10 p.m. Buy tickets online for the best price at turtlebay.org.
Planning a wedding? Celebrate the moment with a free dinner for two at Odell Craft Barbecue. With their slow-smoked brisket that melts in your mouth, even Texans say it's some of the best they've ever had. We cater events and weddings of all sizes, from intimate gatherings to receptions of 1,000 guests. We make delicious food and great service, so you can stay present with the people who matter. Odell Craft Barbecue, real wood, real fire, real flavor. Book your free tasting at ReddingBarbecue.com. Again, book your free tasting at ReddingBarbecue.com.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300. A reputation for excellence since 1965.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Hello, my name is Lindsay Myers. I'm the president and CEO of Turtle Bay Exploration Park. Thank you to Redding Rancheria for all of their support and partnership over the years.
Hi, I'm Heather Kellenhofer, president of NorCal Breast Cancer Connection, continuing the legacy of NorCal Think Pink. We would like to express our sincere gratitude to Redding Rancheria for all the support over the years.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey to the capital city. It's a long, long wait while I'm sitting in committee. But I know I'll be a law someday. At least I hope and pray that I will. But today I am still just a bill.
Schoolhouse Rock.
Our Schoolhouse Rock. We all, well, some of us grew up with that.
I was pre-Schoolhouse Rock.
Welcome back, everybody. We're here back at Jefferson State of Mind. We have a special news break, so to speak, here. We have Mark Baird on the line. He's going to give us the update on the Second Amendment position with this court case. So, how are you, sir?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Living the dream.
Shoot away.
Yeah. Okay, so the en banc panel has vacated the three-judge panel decision. The en banc hearing has been calendared for the first week in June. They haven't said what day it is yet, and we're still waiting to hear that. And then yesterday got the news that somebody named David Roberts, who represents the Brady Center to Prevent Gun Violence, the Giffords Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence, Everytown for Gun Safety, John Hopkins University researchers, Kelly Roskam and Emily Walsh, who we represent in their private capacity, and intend to submit a amicus brief on behalf of the defendant appellee, Rob Bonta. So the Washington, D.C. law firms and the Brady Center, the Giffords Law Center, Every Town for Gun Safety, and John Hopkins University are all lined up to ban the Second Amendment in California.
Unbelievable.
Oh, I can see the Supreme Court in our future.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think that it's very believable. And in fact, I wondered why they hadn't jumped into this sooner. But I think the three-judge panel probably gave them a wake-up call that, hey, this case, they could lose this case. The state of California can lose this case. And so now they're all, the D.C. law firms are all lined up to jump on board to try to ban your right to carry.
Nice.
And I don't know why Washington, D.C. lawyers care about it, but they do. And I don't know why John Hopkins University cares about it, the right to carry in California, but they do. And here we go. Some people from out of state are going to try to prevent you from having a Second Amendment.
So you said the hearing is going to be the first week of June. Is that going to be back up in Seattle like it was last time?
Oh, absolutely. Back
up
in Seattle, yeah.
Okay.
You betcha, sure. So it's very interesting to me, because no one cared about open carry until 1968. The only reason they cared about it then was to take guns away from black people, because they were demonstrating and the California legislature didn't like that.
Thank you, Governor Reagan.
Thank you, Governor Reagan and Don Mulford, that champion of liberty, Republican Don Mulford. And then we progress now a few years, and then we used to openly carry an unloaded weapon, rifle or pistol, and then in 2012 and 2013, some little idiot from Glendora, California, who knows nothing about our area, knows nothing about the North State, knows nothing really, and he said you don't need a gun to go get a cheeseburger. Well, I think the people in Luby's cafeteria in Texas and the guy who defended his son from a wild murderer in a McDonald's in Alabama might disagree with that. And in fact, anyone who's been under the gun of a criminal might disagree with that. But this guy has state provided guards who have AR-15s, by the way. And the Highway Patrol guards the governor, they have AR-15s. In fact, all the cops have AR-15s. The only people not allowed to have weapons, modern weapons, are you. Now, if we simply look at modern history, we can determine that that won't pan out for you. In many examples in modern history, Ukraine, when Russia invaded Ukraine, they had very strict gun laws. Nobody had a gun. What did they end up doing? Well, within weeks, they're shoveling guns out the back door to anybody that wants one. Mm-hmm. Funny how that works. So they created a militia when they were invaded by a foreign power intent on murdering their people and destroying their government. And all of a sudden, now everybody can have a gun. In Israel, on October 7th, 3,000 people were murdered, kidnapped, murdered, raped, brutally murdered, burnt alive. I mean, unspeakable acts took place in Israel on October the 7th, but they have, you know, contrary to popular belief, they have very strict gun laws. Certain people are allowed to carry because they're deemed better than most people in the carry area, I suppose. And now all of a sudden those gun laws, although they have not gone away, they've been relaxed, severely relaxed, so that more people can carry because murder is not a good thing. And then we go to Iran. The regime in Iran has murdered tens, if not hundreds of thousands of its own people. Murdered them, executed them. They just executed 19 people this week. Well, how did they get away with that? I know, because the IRGC are the only ones that have guns. People aren't allowed to have guns there. So guess what happens when tyrants get a hold of guns and no one else has them? All of a sudden what Thomas Jefferson said was true. He said that men were not born with saddles on their backs to be ridden by their betters. Well, apparently that's not true in California. You were born with a saddle on your back. You were intended to be directed by your betters. you will be disarmed. You will only have what the state says you can have, when they say you can have it, how they say you can have it, in the number they say you can have, if you can jump through all the hoops, if you can do all the training. Now, how is that possible in a shall-issue state? Because shall-issue is a relative thing. They shall issue it if they want to. You shall get permission if they want you to have it. That's the only question we're asking this court, and even the three-judge panel failed to answer the question. Do we have rights or don't we? Now, the three-judge panel said that the permit was no good in 95% of California because you weren't allowed to get permission to openly carry in 95% of California. So they said, well, that's a ban on the Second Amendment because you aren't allowed to get permission. Now, in 5% of California, which oddly enough would turn the table on this elusive, vapid permit that no one's ever gotten, because in 5% of California, in counties with less than 200,000 people, the court said, well, the permit scheme will stand because it is a shall-issue permit, and you could get a permit, even though the open carry permit, even in counties of under 200,000 people, is facially unconstitutional. Because why? Because no one's ever gotten one. No such permit has ever been issued. No application exists for the permit. No sheriff has ever issued one. Well, how can that be in a shall-issue state if it's actually shall-issue? Because to me, if the state says they shall issue permission, that means anybody that walks in there gets it.
As we look at all this, it's just one more thing in California. That's what we've been talking about all morning. And here we have a Board of Supervisors here that won't defend us against a corrupt state. It's just, the state is corrupt. Let's just call it what it is. They're trying to take your freedoms. They're trying to take your liberty. They're trying to take your rights. They're trying to take your land. They're trying to take your money. They're trying to take your life, basically. And we are not going to, we're not going to submit.
And we will be interested in
it. They have taken it.
Yeah, we already have it.
They don't have my life.
We'll be interested in hearing in June how this en banc decision comes out.
Well, let's look at this facially, because what would be the reason for the en banc to take the case? They don't like the way it turned out the last time.
Right.
Well,
that's the only reason they would have to take the case.
That's why it's going to end up at the Supreme Court.
I mean, that's the...
Affirmative.
Right. What we need to do is, let's see, next week is Mother's Day. I have a guest coming in for the first half of that. Maybe we can, are you going to be available? You can call on about 9:30 and we can take that whole half hour to go through this.
Sure. Sounds good. Please, to keepandbear.com, and if Wynn would give the address for Pecan, another 30 grand coming our way. 30 grand to show up to that court every single time. So please, please, we can win this thing. We're very close to winning it. The state has nothing. Please help us. If you want to see your liberty restored, you have to help. I can't do this financially on my own.
Amen. So if you want to send a check, cash, or money order, whatever, you can send it to Pecan, P-E-C-A-N, and make the check out to Pecan. And on the lower left-hand part, in the memo part of your check, write 2A. And then you can mail it to 1304 East Street, Suite 110. Again, 1304 East Street, Suite 110, Redding, California, 96001.
So, Mark, listen, thank you, brother. Thank you for doing this. In fact, everybody who's a patriot and a citizen in this state should thank you. And let's support Mark Baird. Let's support this court case. It's the real deal.
Amen.
And anyway, brother, have a great day. Say hi to Cindy, and God bless you, man.
Thank you.
Well, Richard, boy, oh boy, huh? I mean,
the hits just keep on coming.
It does, you know. The fun never does stop, according to my friend Mark Kent, right? Oh, man, I'm telling you, you got more stuff, too, don't you?
I do. And I originally was going to come in and talk about my District 1 race, but I've switched gears because of the Board of Supervisor meeting that is happening this Tuesday. There are some election contract related items, and this is not a good thing what's happening. First of all, I'm going to be throwing Joe Larmore under the bus again, okay, due to his incompetence or his intentional acts. We don't know which yet. So when he first got on, everybody says, oh, he's great. We're not doing retroactive agreements anymore. Can you see? We're all caught up. That lasted about 6 months, by the way. And now the retroactive agreements are filling the agendas again. So Mr. Larmour's office is now lacking there, which is why you don't hear people give it, touting that achievement anymore. And so we have two retroactive renewal agreements and one renewal agreement for elections-related items. Now, here's the problem, first of all. They're on consent. They should be in the regular open session because, gee, you think elections are at the forefront here in Shasta County? Okay? The second thing is two of these contracts. So one contract is to renew the printer, Runbeck printer. Gee, any problems with Runbeck lately that we're aware of? Yeah. And here's the thing, folks. I'm reading right off the staff reports. I've read the contracts and the staff reports for Tuesday, item C7, C8, and C9. Everything I'm saying today is based off of facts and data and documents. A year and a half ago, myself and others went to the Board of Supervisors and says, we need to get away from Runbeck. And I sent the board a list. There were four approved ballot printers in California, one of them being Orange County, by the way. And I said, let's get a local ballot printer. Let's get away from Runbeck. Okay?
When you say local, you mean within the city?
Within the state of California.
Gotcha.
They have failed to do that. I've never seen that on an agenda in the subsequent year and a half. And I also said, concurrently, let's apply to be our own ballot printer. As Orange County is. That is about a one-year process.
Yep.
That was a year and a half ago, folks. We have not done it. Okay? That's local control. One of the candidates ran on local control, and he apparently does not want it for elections. All right? So now we are, and it gets better. Oh, trust me, it gets better. So two of these three contracts expired in December, 4.5 months ago. And here we are, 30 days from an election, and they are rushing these contracts last minute, on consent, by the way.
And that's the board. That's not the ROV office.
That's the Board of Supervisors. That is the county council's office. They're the ones tasked with maintaining current contracts and approving new contracts. All right? And I'm not sure if Dave Rickard has a part in this oversight as far as contracts, expiration dates, renewals. I don't know if he has a part in it. But certainly the Board of Supervisors, they're the ones that approve these contracts. Okay.
We need some people that are calling the boards of supervisors and asking them to put that on the regular calendar. It needs to be switched.
Yeah.
There's no question about it. And I know last time, what I don't like is the closed session situation that they have. This isn't closed session, but they have that. They say, any comments on closed session? Well, what are you talking about? Yeah. We don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Comments on closed session. Well, what's that going to be about?
So, and, yeah, I was going down, so two of them expired in December.
Right.
The third one expires at any moment because in the staff report it reads, this amendment needs to be approved before June 2nd because if it is not, it expires before the June 2nd election. All right? So that one is expiring at any moment.
So how many of these would be expiring? Three? Out of how
two
many?
Of them have already expired
and
in December.
And
the third one expires at any moment.
Out of how many?
Out of these three contracts. Okay. One contract's for the print, ballot print services. The other contract is for the Agilis software services. And the third contract is for the actual Hart Civic. Now, we own the Hart Civic election machines, but we have to pay for the software, the firmware updates, and the support. So those are the three contracts up on Tuesday. So we've known this election's coming.
No surprise.
For a long time.
Yeah.
Who dropped the ball?
Yeah.
Where we're doing these election contracts last minute.
Yeah.
Literally at the last minute, shoving it down our face. I believe this is intentional, all right? This is either incompetence or it's intentional. And it could be a little bit of both, but I do believe this is intentional because I said the board had ideas to get local control with ballot printing,
They failed to do it.
They failed to do it. And so now, by presenting these at the last minute, we have no choice. We have no choice but to accept these contracts. But listen to this. Oh, it gets better. It gets really good. So if you read the current Runbeck contract, they have timelines. It says, all right, 60 days before an election, the county shall do this. 30 days, 15 days, 20 days, right? Because they're ballot printers. So
the county being the client has to provide the contractor being Runbeck with the appropriate information in order for Runbeck to then follow state and federal law regarding timelines and printing and mailing and everything else, right?
We're outside of that window.
We're running without a contract right now. The the Runbeck printing contract expired. We're running without a contract. This is not a small matter. So guess what? If the ballots show up today, which they should, today is date is E-minus 30, mm-hmm. so the ballots should show up today. But that means the county has been already corresponding with Runbeck without a contract in place in order to get the ballots printed and mailed 30 days out according to state law. We are running without a contract, and that's not even the worst part. Okay? These items today, or Tuesday, should have been publicly agendized much, much sooner for public agendized, discussion, votes, etc., so that then we can work under a current valid contract.
For full disclosure to
the public. For full disclosure to the public. So yeah. Now they're doing things without any disclosure to the public because they have to follow the state and federal timelines on the ballots and the mailings and the printing dates and all that. This is egregious on so many levels. Oh. Did I say it gets better?
So where does the blame lie here? Is it Joe Lara?
That's what.
So
I don't know,
it's for sure with County Council's office, Joe or his subordinates. Okay. At a minimum, it lies with them because they're the ones that approve contracts as to form and content. They are likely the ones. I don't know the answer. Somebody is tasked with tracking contracts and their expiration
would
dates.
That be the,
somebody has to be. Might be Dave Rickert.
That's what I'm thinking.
I don't know.
Would that be his job?
I don't know. I can tell you right now, that particular question, that's not the Board of Supervisors' job. That is staff's job. Somebody in staff is supposed to be tracking this stuff and then making sure that the board gets a renewal contract in a timely manner to vote on and
fund. Would there be anything that the ROV office would have jurisdiction over in this? Because it's about voting. Go ahead.
No.
Okay.
No, unless it's been delegated.
Okay.
Remember, 3 years ago when Kathy Allen did the Hart Civic contract, that board at that time specifically delegated her the authority to sign and get that contract.
Okay.
So unless it's been delegated to Clint Curtis, he has no authority.
And we don't know that.
We do not know if it's been delegated to Clint right now.
Okay.
But they're working without a contract.
Yeah.
Without public disclosure. I mean, come on.
I get you. The thing is I'm trying to figure out if Clint Curtis knew about this, if he was privy to it a year ago, year and a half ago, when we were all talking about it, if he was privy to it, does he enter into the equation? I'm not trying to throw blame at anybody. I just want to know, you know, who knows what. And
what is the term of the contracts if they sign them? Is it year to year? Is it 5 year?
Did I say? Oh, I know I keep saying this, but my gosh, it keeps getting better. So this current Runbeck contract on Tuesday, 5 years. 5 years. All right. We're going to be stuck. And let me say why we're going to be stuck. These county contracts, they usually have a termination clause. Okay. And a lot of these county contracts, which I've read a lot of them, they have either a 30-day or a 60 or 90-day, it's called a with cause or without cause clause, okay, that either party can submit to say, hey, we don't want to do business anymore, here's your 30-day notice, we're out. So the Runbeck one here, let me scroll down because I want to be totally accurate. The Runbeck one for the ballot printing, here's the termination. They can only terminate, so if either party violates the contract, the other party notifies the violator and say, you're in violation, you have 10 days to cure, 10 days to fix. All right? And then if they fix it, contract stays in place. Well, that's easy. That's easy to cure an issue, right? A mistake or whatever, an oversight, whatever. That's easy to fix. There is no without cause termination in the ballot printer. Now, these other agreements, and I have them both up here. One of these other agreements is the, gosh darn it. Again, I hate dead air just like you guys do. It looks like the Hart Civic one has, it could be the Agelis. Again, I'm scrolling and I don't like dead air time, but here it is here. Here it is, C8, which is the,
because Clint Curtis, as part of his campaign has said he wants to bring the printing to Shasta County.
Yep.
So if we have to go with a runback contract of 5 years, there goes that idea.
Yep.
Right.
gets goodier and goodier, doesn't it?
And that contract can outlive all the boards of supervisors.
Right.
Yes.
And it can outlive the ROV.
In other words, it's forever.
Yeah. Here we go again.
Well, somebody did this, and we just need to find out. We need to find that out. Number one, go ahead.
Well, I found it. So, under the Agilis software contract, item C8.
Okay.
They do have a 90-day opt out without cause.
Oh, okay.
Why didn't they put that in the run back ballot printing contract?
Because
90-day notice.
Somebody doesn't want printing to take 90-day
notice, right? And 90 days is appropriate, for especially for an election-related contract. Even that's kind of short, honestly. But something. So in one of these contracts, we have a 90-day without cause, meaning that we don't have to have cause.
Right.
We just don't want to do business anymore. Why is that not in the runback?
Right.
She just answered it.
Yeah.
She just answered. They're shoving this down our throat, people. They don't want local control over printing. And this is how they're doing it. Last minute, you know, 30 days before the election. This is egregious on so many levels.
I wish I could remember.
Chris Kellstrom on Wednesday is the current chair.
There you go.
The Wednesday prior to the meeting, the chair sits down with county councils, Dave Rickert. They sit down and go over the agenda and approve it for the following week.
Yep.
So Chris Kellstrom knows that these are going in under consent. Okay. Remember, consent means you're going to pass it without deliberation, without, you know, any fanfare. Right? Gee, you think elections in Shasta County? You think maybe we're focused on that? And he allowed them to stay on consent. He should have, on that night, on the review night, he should have pulled them and said, nope, those are going in open session. He did not do that. So there are so many problems here. So this is bombshell, folks. This is a county giving the people the political middle finger.
Yeah.
That's exactly what this is, folks. This is, and that's my opinion. That's my opinion. And this needs to stop. We can't allow, and again, when you let these elected officials usurp individual powers, individual rights, et cetera, and you give them a pass, it's only going to get worse. Our founding fathers warned us of these things. In my humble opinion, we need a change in the Board of Supervisors, and that's all I have. And please look it up.
Okay.
And go to the board meeting on Tuesday. I can't because of my job. But send emails to the Board of Supervisors and or go to the Board of Supervisors and voice your displeasure on everything we just talked about in the last 15
minutes. Or call them.
You can call them also.
Okay, quick question. How many ballots do we need to have printed for Shasta County elections? Just a rough ballpark.
I do not know the answer to that question. We have approximately 115,000 registered voters, but they at least that, and then they have to have some duplicates at each precinct, which there are approximately 60 of those.
Okay.
So it's a lot.
Okay.
It's a lot.
And then it's not just one page. It's going to be multiple pages of a ballot. So we're talking probably close to a million pages of print.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah.
Okay. That's not my point today is talk about
that.
Well,
I'm just thinking, the capacity of it being able to be accommodated here in Shasta. Is there a printer that can do that? I'm sure there are. There could be multiple printers that can do it.
The local printers can do it. The approved printers, one of them's on the coast. I want to say Del Norte County. That's actually where there's an approved printer.
Okay.
And again, we failed. The board failed in the last year and a half, either to get a local printer
so now it's
or do it local.
They're getting it printed?
No, Arizona.
No,
Arizona.
It's still run back right now. But again, we're doing it without a contract in place.
Yeah,
not acceptable.
Got that.
Wow.
None of this is acceptable.
None of this. Well, that's why I'm talking about it. We're not supposed to be paying attention to this stuff.
This is a hot mess, man.
This
hot
is mess. A really big mess, and it's only going to get worse. We need a change at the board. I'm sorry. That's my opinion.
How dare we notice?
I know.
Yeah.
So that's what I want to talk about.
Yeah. You know, and the thing is that we've just, 2027 is going to be an interesting year for us. Dynamics are going to change. The question you have to ask yourself, Shasta County, is are you happy with the current leadership or are you not? If you think things are getting better, that's great. Are they getting better? Are we finding things that every single time we turn around, there's something going on that's attacking our liberty and now it's getting at the county level? Is
and
that what you're thinking?
We are now in an election cycle. The election day is 3 weeks away. Here are some questions to ask those who are running for office.
Yes, absolutely.
And they increased the Hart Civic contract from 1 million to 1.3 million. They gave them a 30% raise.
Oh, what's 300,000?
I don't know.
Ah, come on, 300,000.
That's if we could print ballots locally, that would probably cover printing costs for a local ballot at the local level, probably.
There you go.
This is all the reasons why time has come.
For 51.
Thank you, everybody.
Let's get her done.
Thanks, Rich.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.